This is the first of our two exclusive KGEZ Good Morning Show drill downs made possible by Bailey Insurance Services. Bailey Insurance Services, local and independent. Washington, D.C., we have Linda Kenyon. Good morning, Linda.
Hey, good morning. Good morning. We're all standing by for the opening arguments of the Idaho abortion ban case at the U.S. Supreme Court. So it's possible I may have to bolt. But it's not supposed to start for at least another 8 to 15 minutes. We'll see.
Do we have any idea the way the court might be leaning on this one?
It's hard to say. The question is whether the Idaho law, which prohibits abortions even in emergency cases, trumps the federal law, which says in emergency cases that doctors are required to render medical aid. So it's really a question of which is more powerful than the other.
Well, the question is here, when it comes to emergency aid, doctors have to make split-second decisions. Could they wind up being in trouble for making maybe the wrong decision?
Yeah, well, that's the problem right now, that doctors are afraid to do what they think they need to do medically if it means they're going to wind up in jail. And there have been a couple of cases so far where women have been turned away from emergency room care. And one in particular recently where a woman was miscarrying and the doctors in the emergency room were afraid they would run afoul of the law, so she miscarried in the bathroom of the emergency room and got no medical attention until after.
In the bathroom?
Yeah.
Oh, boy. Yeah, all right. Well, we'll see which way the court goes on that one. It'll be interesting to see how that is. Before the court yesterday, or the day before, I'm not sure which. I think it was yesterday. This was an Oregon case about homelessness and whether or not homeless people should be allowed to sleep outside. Any idea where this is going to go?
Yeah, the court seemed a bit skeptical about enforcing a law saying you cannot sleep outside when there aren't any other places for the homeless people to sleep because the shelters are full. So the questioning from some of the more liberal and even some of the more conservative justices seemed to be leaning toward not being able to enforce that law. Now, I guess it's a totally different situation if their shelters have room. But nonetheless, it does bring up a very important question because homelessness is a problem nationwide, even here in the nation's capital. And various municipalities are trying to figure out ways to get homeless people off the streets, either through sheltering them or just turfing them somewhere else. And that speaks to a much larger problem of, the unaffordability of housing, mental health issues, a whole host of things that could lead somebody to become homeless.
What worries me about this particular bill is that the whole idea of sleeping outside, as a kid growing up here in Kalispell, and we have a homeless problem here, a serious one, but we'd sleep in the backyard all summer long. That was what we did. In fact, there were summers when I never slept in my bed. I would roll out the sleeping bag in the backyard and slept under the stars, and I would hate to think that I would be arrested for doing that because I'm guilty of breaking the law of sleeping outside.
Well, you were sleeping outside in your own backyard, on your own private property. This is sleeping on city streets, and that would be a totally different situation. So,
all right, so I'm
nobody. So you're not going to be arrested.
Okay.
But it does bring up some questions about where can you and where can you not, mm-hmm. Sleep. And if you have no place to go, what do you do?
Let's move on here to something that it looks like we're finally going to move forward by getting some aid to a couple of our allies.
Yes. The situation is that after a six-month delay, the House over the weekend passed the foreign aid bill. My mind is still on the homeless right now.
Yeah, I threw that at you.
And then the Senate yesterday passed it. The president's supposed to sign it today. We don't have an ETA on the presidential signing, if there'll be a ceremony. But it's a $95 billion emergency foreign aid package. It ends several months of bitter fighting between within the House Republican among House Republicans and some Republicans in the Senate. But nonetheless, the Senate passed a Ukraine funding bill 6 months ago, and in the intervening months, the House was sitting on it, and they ended up passing their own bill. Which now went to the Senate, and the senators, you know, they would have preferred their own bill, not the House's bill, but they sort of said, okay, we need to get this aid to Ukraine, so let's just pass this. And they did. Now, of this $95 billion emergency foreign aid package, $61 billion of it is for the war in Ukraine. The vote in the Senate was a lopsided bipartisan 79-18. And now the president's going to sign it, as I said, later today.
You know, the UK is sending an awful lot of equipment and armaments and money to Ukraine. So we're not alone in that.
Right, right. And, you know, I will tell you also that this is not just a Ukraine aid package. It's $15 billion in military aid for Israel, $9 billion in humanitarian aid for Gaza, and... Also, you know, this is a signal that Republicans, for the most part, agree in the Senate, even though there was a lot of disagreement in the House. But this is one of those rare moments, by the way, where Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer and Senate Minority Leader Mitch McConnell were on the same side. And McConnell was asked about it later, and he said, this is one of the most consequential things I've ever done in my entire career. And it's not that I caved to Democrats or anything like that. We just happen to agree on this issue.
I want to move along here to something that is all too familiar to those of us who were coming of age in the 1960s, and that is campus protests. It seems like these protests are very similar to when we were protesting the war in Vietnam. We were protesting the way that African-American people were being treated in our society. And some of those protests got a little out of hand. And, of course, it kind of culminated with the shootings at Kent State, which kind of stopped everything cold. The Democratic Convention in Chicago, that turned out to be an incredible fiasco. Are we in danger of going back into something like that?
Well, you know, college campuses have always been a bastion. Hold on one second. That's my alarm to tell me that I was supposed to call you. I have done that. you know, college campuses have always been a bastion of free speech. And one of the reasons for that is that college is expected to teach people to think critically, to ask questions, to expand their horizons, to consider all points of view. And so it's not surprising that there are protests on college campuses. And while it does seem to harken back to yesteryear, this is about the rights of the Palestinian people, the war in Gaza, and the tremendous number of casualties inflicted on the Palestinian civilian population in Gaza as Israel tries to fight back Hamas. Now, the problem is that some of these protests have gotten out of hand. At Columbia University in particular, there have been a number of arrests, and the situation got to the point where the university president closed regular classes and moved everything to virtual classes until the temperature cools down a bit. So... you know, this is a very big situation, and one of the reasons it is a very big situation is because students, Jewish students, on college campuses, Columbia, NYU, and a number of other college campuses, have feel threatened that this is a rise of anti-Semitism, that their safety is an issue. And in some cases, the anti-Semitism has grown to a point where people are now fearing for their lives if they are Jewish. So, yes, this is a very big deal, these campus protests. And now we have House Speaker Mike Johnson, who's going to visit the campus of Columbia University in New York City today, which has been one of the sites of those pro-Palestinian demonstrations and arrests. Speaker Johnson has called these demonstrations un-American, which kind of brings the question to the forefront, is protest un-American? Or is it the anti-Semitism that is un-American? Is it the arrests that are un-American? What is it that's un-American, and where does freedom of speech come in? And these are all going to be very large questions that the U.S. is grappling with now, and I'm sure for a long time to come.
Yikes. Well, it'll be interesting to see if Speaker Johnson's perception of the situation changes once he visits his campus, because he has known to, when he gets the facts, he's been known to change his mind about things.
This is true. This is true. But he has been a very strong supporter of Israel. And so I think he just wants to, you know, maybe talk to the Jewish students, maybe see things for himself. Whether his presence is going to make any, ripple effect, it's hard to say. I mean, honestly, those of us here in Washington, and certainly your listeners know who House Speaker Mike Johnson is because we talk about him most days.
Yeah.
But does the rest of the country have any idea who Speaker Mike Johnson is?
I wonder. They're still trying to figure out who John Boehner was. Even though he wrote a book.
The emotional John Boehner, who had no qualms about crying in public, yes.
Yeah, I still recommend reading his book, On the House, Boehner's book. If you really want to understand what it's like to be the Speaker of the House of Representatives, boy, this is a book that'll give you a real insight on that from the perspective of the guy who's looking at it through his own eyes. And it's a pretty fantastic book.
And you know, I mean, he said the happiest day of his life was the day he decided that he was no longer going to be Speaker of the House and was leaving Congress. So you have to wonder what Speaker Mike Johnson is thinking about the job around this time.
Yeah, you sure do. Speaking of the House of Representatives, what about our old buddy George Santos? Gone but not forgotten.
Yeah, remember George Santos? Yes, were you going to say gone but not forgotten?
Yeah. Well, forgotten.
Well,
was it now forgotten but not gone?
Yeah, right. Speaker Mike Johnson was pretty okay with the expulsion of George Santos from the House of Representatives. Santos was involved in all kinds of situations from his district in New York. He had fabricated, or I should say allegedly fabricated, although, you know, he hasn't really denied it, so much about himself that even the people who elected him to his Republican seat in the House of Representatives said, you lie to us, you're not who we thought you were, we want you out. Apparently he was involved in a lot of financial improprieties. He lied about his college education, he lied about his family, he lied about his, right down to playing volleyball at Baruch College in New York. Pretty much everything, and was finally kicked out of the House of Representatives by a bipartisan vote. Well, then, several months later, and keep in mind he's facing a number of court challenges, and he's on trial on various criminal counts, unless he's made a plea deal, which we're waiting to hear. But the former Representative George Santos, the amazing Mr. Santos, did later say he was going to run for the House again. The very people who kicked him out, even members of his own party, he said, I'm going to run again. Well, he has now apparently changed his mind and has dropped his bid to run for the House, not as a Republican, by the way, but as an independent. For some reason, he has not given anybody the reason yet, which kind of makes one speculate maybe he decided to take a plea deal, and that was one of the things he had to agree to, not to run for public office again. He's in, he's out, he's in, now he's out again.
Maybe we will forget him this time.
Maybe, I don't know, though. He's kind of legendary. I mean, the fabrications were all so, so bizarre, and It was hard to turn away, really. It was a sideshow that the Republicans were quite embarrassed about.
And the thing I think that, I kind of joke and say we should forget about this, but the fact of the matter is we should keep in mind that these things can happen if we're not doing our homework, if we're not, as voters, really looking into the issues and looking into the candidates and, you know, trying to get an understanding of who they are and what they will represent if they're elected to represent us.
Right, right. And, you know, that's a big deal. I mean, this is why, you know, humans tend to want to collect with humans they agree with. And that means that the American people tend to choose the news that, you know, concurs with their pre-existing belief systems, their thoughts on the issues. And so if you only take a steady diet of one point of view and you don't listen to others, then, you know, that can affect how you vote. And a lot of these folks either didn't pay attention to the other points of view, or they simply didn't pay attention at all, even though local newspapers had profiled George Santos and did spill a lot of information about him, to which, you know, the Republicans who elected him later said, well, we didn't know. Well, you didn't know because you weren't paying attention.
Or maybe you didn't want to know.
Or you didn't want to know, yeah.
Linda, as always, we appreciate your great reporting, and thank you for drilling down for us this morning.
Well, I thank you. You have a wonderful day.
You too.